Have you done many epistles in the past? And can you talk a little bit about that form?
Letters.
I don't think... Occasionally...
I'm explaining the word epistles to him.
Listen, I've written epistles to thistles. And... Or I can whistle an epistle. So on.
I don't remember having written any other poems in as letters.
Well, I published a book a couple years ago, or half of a book, that is whose structure, it's not poetry though, it's done in the form of letters. Actual letters on the computer, letters to each other, right? And so I've done that, but I don't remember very much in the way of poetry. I don't know. Well, anyway, I want to take a few clever steps and slip into my friend's best poem, hobbled by lonely brain, freed by anxious love, his images full of color, his breath encasing my body. This is the proper use of art. Desire should not be wasted on sweaty skin or pulsating wallets. My friend writes poems as if they were related to him. He speaks a language known to silent wolves. He invites me, not but only squares things with the world. I like to lie back in his best poem, my hands cupping my restful head, ready to be a verb if he needs me, willing to live with colors I've never seen before. I'm not looking for the impossible. I only itch to mean something to his happy readers, those readers who admire his deft hand, his quick eye. I would gladly take a running start and dive face first into the best stanza of our best poem. The lights would come on again all over Paris, all over Regina, music of the spheres and all other primary shapes falls from the dark sky. I'd gladly make way for his favorite strophe, step aside as eager tropes lift wise beauty to this page. This will be no sheet, but a globe made of rounding birds. Oh, that's kind of good. A home for eternity, a sound no reader has made or heard. I am heard bird. I never noticed that before. I am filled with wanting to bide until his back is turned, to escape his mindful gaze, to become the very cadence of his heart for all time.
I feel
I
feel I was made love to.
I was just going to say it, felt like a love poem.
Was it good for you too?
Yeah. It still is.
Isn't it good that you get to be a better poet when you get old?
Well, you know, McClure talking about being an athlete of openness, and it takes about 80 years of practice to get it right, huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys, you are.
No, see, poor Shelley never had a chance to get any good.
Well. But the truth is, poetry is the one thing where, you know, if you still have your marbles, and it's apparent you guys do, and you've been writing all that time, what, 60 years? That it ought, and the wisdom and the experience and the memory and having read all that, yes, you're supposed to be peaking at this time.
Well, he had to because he didn't, like, you know, a lot of writers.
I don't make any claim to wisdom.
A lot of writers.
Or as such.
How?
Who is it? Who is?
How
is,
why?
Is it,
Creeley. How
is it,
wise
is it ages. Olson or?
Huh?
Who is against wisdom as such? Is that Olson?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In a letter to Duncan, I think. Yeah. But
you were just
a lot of guys, a lot of writers, start writing poems, and then they do that thing that whoever said, Eliot or somebody said, anybody who's not a poet when they're young is an idiot. Anyone who remains a poet when they get after the age of 40 is an idiot. Well, or something, not a direct quote.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, the ones who write this, that, and everything, like, say, Margaret Atwood, she hardly ever writes a poem anymore. And this is true of a lot of people. They're too busy writing novels now, or short stories.
Well, I only write poems, but you write novels, essays, biographies, histories.
Well, Fawcett quit writing poems, and Persky quit writing poems, so on and so forth.
Fawcett did not quit writing poems. He quit publishing them.
Yeah.
He told me that he still writes poems.
I've seen some of the ones he's written lately. They're...
Brian Fawcett,
right.
From Prince George.
From Prince George, exactly.
Right. You're writing about old age and thinking, not just as subjects, but they seem to be characters in the book.
Yeah, the one poem, Old Age, is Old Age and Thinking are characters.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Which takes over from Beauty as a character in a previous...
Beauty is a character in the first poem in After Desire, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's like a proper noun, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a young man.
Well,
but the great thing to me about this poem, I think these two poems are much too long to read. But
no, I don't think so.
You think you?
I would love to have you read the poem.
Yeah, it'll give me time to do some reading.
Oh, which one? Writing Old Age or The Remonstrance? The Remonstrance is a better poem.
Read that then.
Okay.
You're saying
so. Writing Old Age is a poem about old age and writing, and at the end of that poem, writing says, "My name is not just writing; it's writing old age." In response to that poem, never have done this before. This second poem is really a criticism of the first one. Remonstrance on behalf of thoughts. First off, are there two of you guys or just one? Old age says he's bedogged. Sorry, and that refers back to in the old age poem. But now old age is writing, and he goes back to his initial question. Does his writing also have to imagine coming to an end? And as if in obedience to an underlying intuition, his persistent thought of an end departs from the present moment and goes off sort of like a dog and lies in its corner. It doesn't leave the scene. No, by no means. It keeps an eye on old age from its corner. So here's where the speaker of remonstrance says, old age says he's bedogged, by one particular thought, that of his coming demise, the opposite of mise-en-scène, so his leaving the scene, or as Ed Dorn called it, the set. And he can't refer to himself, do a selfie, without thinking of it. Speaking as a thought, myself, and as a member of NAT, the National Association of Thoughts, I think I have a little more freedom than that. I don't think my right to appear is dependent on the thinker's intention to refer to himself or in any way. Maybe if old age could be more welcoming to his thoughts, he might feel less oppressed by us. Then there's writing. As I've said, I'm not sure if this is a separate being or a hand puppet of old age. Writing presents himself as unconcerned. That's how this brash, youngish guy wants us to take him, as unconcerned with anything other than his task. One of self-actualization, you might say. Writing writes writing. There's nothing on his mind, his plate, but his anticipation of the next sentence. The next sentence. I don't believe writing, his presentation of himself as a one-dimensional, self-generating, linear process coming into being sentence by sentence. Not a thought in his head? What about NAT, National Association of Thoughts? Wasn't that a thought popping into his head in the middle of the night? A free gift to him as a writer. A thought. What about the thought of NAT occurring to him again just now?
Oh, God.
Just occurring. No credit to him. These are members of my bargaining unit, even if working under the table. They have to pay dues. NAT, Local 0000, Inspiration. Those kind things you say about old age writing before you merge back into him, those are kind, loving thoughts. Bypassing thinking? Not by a long shot. Are you some kind of language machine attached to a hand? I believe you more writing after you've made your peace with old age. Now, like old age, you acknowledge the presence of thoughts. But you, too, like old age, are spooked by them. But you're spooked in a different way from old age. Old age feels thoughts wrapping around him. When he does a selfie, there's the end of a cerement, a strip of winding cloth, curling out from behind one ear. He feels like he's being stifled, mummified. But for you, writing, your workspace has become like a tomb. Your access even to your writing material is blocked by a thought that lies on the table like a dead body. You go to reach for your writing book, and it's under the thing's cold shoulder, your pen just out of reach behind a knee. Well, let me run some footage off a CCTV camera you've never noticed, just up there behind your head. We put it there to catch thoughts up working under the table. Well, what do we see? It's a dark room. The timer reads 7:29 a.m. a Wednesday in mid-October. Off-camera audio. Sound of a shower running. Then a young male voice singing. Now from the adjacent bedroom, there enters an old man wearing just glasses and, oddly enough, a Vancouver Canadiens baseball cap. He approaches the table and climbs up onto it, then lies down prone over an open writing book and some pencils and pens, and apparently goes to sleep. Look, writing, as you emerge from the washroom, that's no thought. That's no dead body. It's old age stretched out on your half-finished page. Signed, A Thought, rank and file.